Good morning, everyone. It is 10:01 a.m., June 18, 2025. I call this regular meeting of the North Dakota Public Service Commission to order. All three commissioners are here, so we have a quorum. Before anything else, will you please stand and join me in pledging our allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, and I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Haugenhofer, do you?
Yes, I have a couple. The last commission meeting, I should have referenced this, but I forgot, so I want to bring it up now. NDSU sponsored a Bison to a Buck in summer program. It was a 12-day, three-credit course for students, and the students that went out there and toured the Bakken were in ag, business, engineering, and other fields. And it was to get to know about our energy sector and their young adults going into different areas of study. And I thought it was a great idea how they connected the students to go out, be hands-on out in the energy industry. They got to hear from the governor. They went across the state. They were in Minot. They followed the barrel tour covering the production life cycle of a barrel of oil at the Hess Corporation. They met with Neset Consulting in Tioga. They toured the Bakken area skill, met with One Oak, toured the Falkirk Mining Company and Rainbow Energy. We're in Dickinson. Then on the 30th, they were at Marathon Petroleum Refinery. And then they ended at the Heritage Center, where President Cook spoke to them again. And then there was a panel. We had lunch. Don't forget the lunch. Then we had a panel discussion where they got to, I was honored to moderate the panel, but they heard from MDU, Excel, Applied Digital, and Transmission Authority. Sorry, Claire. And I asked them some questions, but I could tell that they were curious. So we opened it up to questions. So the last 45 minutes, these students asked the panel a lot of inquisitive, very detailed questions. And I just thought this was such a great program that to connect our up-and-coming workforce to employers for them to see what goes on in the energy sector, because energy touches everything. And I was very impressed. And sometimes when I look at this younger generation, my thought sometimes is we will be in good hands with those young adults who are asking the questions. So that was just a remarkable idea.
It does sound phenomenal. Who did you say hosted that tour?
Excuse me. NDSU, Randy.
Oh, okay.
NDSU. One for Randy. And then the other thing I want to just mention is June is Excavation Trench Safety Awareness Month. We have Safe Digging Month, Call Before You Dig, 811. We're up at the State Fair. We're doing a lot with our 811 program. And yesterday, there was a group, the Dakota Safety Network held their quarterly meeting yesterday, and this is a group of dedicated work safety stakeholders. So yesterday they had an event, and there were over 100 people there from various excavation companies in attendance who heard about the importance of 811, how our PSC complaint process works, and they were able to ask questions about the one-call process. And I think with workforce changing over, this is so important that these organizations get out there and educate on the rules of when you have to call before you dig, what's the process, the timeline. So I'm glad to see this event was well attended with over 100 participants learning about this system. So I want to do a shout out to Conrad, who was there representing the PSC and who works very hard to get out there and educate people on that. So well done, Conrad.
Good. Commissioner Kringstad.
Yeah, I just want to highlight, so last week, Guy Welch from our Reclamation Division was gracious enough to let me come along to an inspection that he did at Coyote Creek Mine. And that was really great because I haven't been on a mine site since I worked at Basin Electric many, many years ago. So it was good to see everything again with fresh eyes. We saw the operations. They're doing a new tree planting out there for reclamation. We even trekked down to one of the ponds to verify the flow rate that was going into that pond. So just very impressive, and perhaps the most impressive thing that I saw out there was just the excellent reclamation that's going on. We stopped and looked at some land that had been fully reclaimed, and you wouldn't even know that it had been disturbed. So it was just a day very well spent in the field. Thanks to Guy. Thank you to Jason from Coyote Creek Mine for taking the time to show me that site. And just thank you to Cole for the critical megawatts that they provide to the grid. Last night, before I went to sleep, I pulled up the MISO grid, and they were providing 37% of the megawatts in the MISO footprint. They got beat out just slightly by natural gas, which was 38.5%. So it wasn't very windy last night, apparently. So it was just important to have that baseload power.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. With that, we have two items on the consent calendar. I move approval of those items plus the previous minutes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, I have three AML cases here, but they're separate. I move the commission close Public Service Commission 2024 Dakota Collieries AML project, case number AM-23-323.
Second.
So first of all, Dakota Collieries was an old mine, like, southeast of Zap, like, kind of where most people would think of the Indian Head mine that is now retired too, once was. And so that's what we're talking about, that area. On June 6th of last year, the commission entered into a contract with Young Gun Construction of Ludlow, South Dakota, for the reclamation of some abandoned coal mines out there. The original contract amount was $1,015,000, just a hair over. 9 change orders were issued, though. And so the final cost was just under $1,082,000. And a lot of that additional was just additional gravel and silt fencing and things like that, because as we got out there and really started working on it, there was a little more to do than previously estimated. So final payment on the contract was approved on October 25th. Contractor is certified that all the employees, subcontractors, and suppliers used for fulfilling the contract have been paid. All the work has been completed satisfactorily. And Michael Howe of our staff served as the project manager. And the AML division recommends that we close the project, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Then the next one, I move the commission close Public Service Commission 2024 Lehigh Road Phase 9 project, title or a case number AM-23-359.
Second.
So on May 21st of last year, we entered into a contract with Earth Energy and Water Systems of New Salem for drilling and remote backfilling of this abandoned underground mine near Dickinson, kind of southwest of town, out near their landfill there. The original contract amount was for $1,024,000. The final cost was just over $1,229,000. So it's a little over $200,000 over. And basically, this project was just an opportunity. There was a lot more grouting than previously anticipated. On June 6th of last year, for this same project, we entered into a contract with GeoServe Incorporated to test the quality of the grout used on the project. The original amount was for $27,450. Actually, our final cost on that was just over, just under $5,200. So we actually saved about $22,000 on that one. Final payments on both contracts have been made. The drilling and grouting contractor certified all employees, subcontractors, and suppliers used for fulfilling the contracts have been paid. Brett Jobe served as project manager, and Scott Bessemer served as a project inspector. And so the AML division recommends that the project be closed, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I have a curious question. As I look at the dates, you know, when the contract is entered and the payment is made, about how long do these projects take on an average? I'm just curious. I think this is impressive, but on the work, but
the average. I mean, I've never thought about an average because some of them are a couple weeks, and some of them are for like 2 year, like where we don't even anticipate getting done the first year.
Okay.
And so it varies quite a bit. I would have to go back and research a bunch of them, unless Jonathan has kind of done that. But I think the majority of them are all in 1 year, probably in the
spring to fall,
3 month range.
3 or 4.
Okay. Yeah, I would say historically construction season.
Yep.
Yep. Because if you know, to your point, Randy, if there's multiple phases to the project, so like work that we can't get done in 1 year, typically we would end the current contract we have and go out and rebid and reissue a new contract just because it's going to be for separate work. So usually I think they, AML works through their process in the spring and tries to get contracts in place by May, June, and depending on weather, how long they can be out there, it can go till October, November.
That's right. You've processed a lot of these claims, haven't
you? So just a follow-up to that. If it goes into different contract season, why is there the need to recontract? Wouldn't it be in the initial contract as far as the time period? I can follow up with Jonathan on some of these questions.
A lot of times we just choose to, based on availability of the grant funding, to, like, you know, we do like the worst part of an area. And then the next year there's more grant funding available. Nothing else more significant has come up, so we go a little farther with it, and kind of based on the priorities of each year.
Okay.
And then the last one from AML, move the commission.
We need a vote on that one.
Okay.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion is approved.
Now I move the Commission close Public Service Commission 2025 Exploratory Drilling AML Project, case number AM-24-32354.
Second.
On December 11th of last year, we renewed a contract with Earth Energy and Water Systems of New Salem for drilling and casing of an abandoned underground mine near New Salem. For those familiar with New Salem, the big hill where the cow is at, this would be right on the south side of there and right on the very west side of New Salem. The renewed contract amount was $325,500. Three change orders were issued, and the final cost was just over $390,000. And basically, we just found more voids, and so there was additional drilling and casing, and they had the time, and so they made it work out. It was good weather for it. The final payment on the contract was approved on March 19th, 2025. The contractor has certified all employees, subcontractors, and suppliers used for fulfilling the contract have been paid. All work was completed satisfactorily. Brett Jobe served as project manager, Scott Besmer as the project inspector, and again, AML recommends that the project be approved, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I've just heard New Salem has a really top-notch high school science teacher. That's what I know.
That's what I've heard, too, a lot out there.
Not denying it, but maybe we should check and verify.
Is there any further discussion?
Go Holsteins.
Go Holsteins.
Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, then moving just down the hall from AML to Reclamation, I move the commission approve bond release 2 for surface coal mining permit NACT-1801 held by the Coteau Properties Company for the Freedom Mine to release all reclamation liabilities on 377.6206 acres of land located in a portion of Section 29, Township 145 North, Range 87 West in Mercer County, effective July 18th of 2025, unless a formal hearing is requested and Coteau Properties Company Bond Release 2, Permit NACT-1801, Application Case Number RC-24-296.
Second.
So I want to emphasize that wasn't a mistake. It's effective July 18th, not June 18th, and I'll get to that point in a minute why that is. On July 11th of last year, Coteau filed for this bond release, and the lands are subject to the current reclamation laws and rules. None of this is old pre-reclamation law stuff. The application contains two separate tracts. Tract 1 is about 218 acres, and that land is owned by Coteau. The other tract is about 159 acres, and that is owned by an estate and partnership. So the first tract, out of those 218 acres, it includes 167 acres of reclaimed tame pasture land and 47 acres that were never disturbed at all, and then various other little things. The surface disturbance began in 1989 with the SPGM stripping and construction of stockpiles and the water management features. The coal removal occurred from 1994 to 2005. The reclamation efforts began in 97 and continued through 2012 when the last affected areas were seeded to initiate the 10-year revegetation responsibility period. Then on that other tract that Coteau does not own, out of, what did I say, the 159 acres there, about 33 acres of that is reclaimed tame pasture land, and about 125 acres were never even disturbed. So the activities on the part that was disturbed began in 1989. The coal, no coal was removed out of this area. It was just for other disturbance purposes on this tract. The reclamation occurred in 2007. On all of these acres in both tracts, there have been no partial bond releases. So all four stages of bond release are being requested with this application. Those four bond release stages are the backfilling and grading is number one, then the soil respreading, then vegetation establishment, and then demonstration of revegetation success. Vegetation establishment has been successful, and the actual topsoil and subsoil respread depths have been verified by our staff. An eighth of a mile of section line road consisting of about an acre along the west side of the first tract that Coteau owns was directly disturbed by the mining activities. That road has been reconstructed according to Mercer County standards, and the section line was inspected by the Mercer County Road Superintendent last September and approved. The formal inspection was conducted last October 29th. The participants on that inspection included people from our staff as well as Coteau staff, but the Mercer County Commissioners, the Mercer County Soil Conservationist, the Office of Surface Mining, Casper Field Office, and the North Dakota Game and Fish Department were all invited, but they declined. The notice of the bond release application was published in the Hazen Star, the county paper, weekly from October 31st through November 21st of last year. No objections to the release have been received. Coteau is not requesting any reduction in the bond amount since this area is currently covered by a worst-case reclamation condition that exists for Freedom Mine. If approved, the bond release will be, like I said, July 18th, unless a formal hearing is requested. So if a formal hearing is requested, then everything gets set back. I mentioned that no bond is being released on this. Their overall bond that covers the whole mine is actually just in the renewal process based on some other revisions that are taking place outside of this. I expect that the total bond amount, when that's done, will be about $204 million. So there's a lot of money available there. These reclaimed lands have met all applicable performance standards. The Reclamation Division recommends approval, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I just want to thank the staff for the very detailed memo. It was very easy to follow and very informative. So thank you for the extra work. Great work.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
My portfolio is concluded. Commissioner Haugenhofer.
Thank you. I move the commission adopt the order on petition in Otter Tail Power Company, MDU, Utilities Company, 345 KV Transmission Line, Jamestown to Ellendale, Public Convenience and Necessity, Case Number PU-24-91.
Second.
Thank you. On February 29th, 2024, Otter Tail and MDU filed a joint application for a Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity to construct, own, and operate approximately 85 miles of 345 transmission line and expand four substations located in Stutzman, Lemoore, and Dickey counties. On March 27, 2024, the Commission issued a Notice of Opportunity for Hearing, allowing until May 10, 2024, for receiving comments or requests for hearing. No responses were received. On November 20th, 2024, the Commission issued its order granting Otter Tail and MDU certificates of public convenience and necessity. Now we're going to jump ahead. 182 days have passed, and on May 21st, 2025, Douglas J. Neal filed on behalf of a group of landowners, townships, and other interested parties a petition to intervene to rescind the Commission's order of November 20th, 2024, and to reopen the proceedings. On May 27th, he again filed an amended petition to intervene. On June 6, 2025, Otter Tail and MDU filed a response to the petitions. On June 13, 2025, Douglas Neal filed a supplemental response to Otter Tail and MDU's response. On June 16, 2025, Otter Tail and MDU filed a proposed order. On June 17th, 2025, Douglas Neal filed an objection to Otter Tail and MDU's June 16th, 2025 filing. So now I'm going to go into our discussion based on all these requests that went in. And I'm going to cite a lot of Century Code on which we file our decision, what we considered in this petition. North Dakota Administrative Code Section 6902.06.02 provides a petition for reconsideration. The number one thing under that is time for filing. A petition for reconsideration must be filed within 15 days after the notice of the decision has been given under North Dakota Century Code Section 28-32-13. The content The petition must state the specific grounds upon which the petition rests or a statement of further showing to be made. So it's obvious we issued the order. Within 15 days, they have to petition to reconsider, and they did not file timely. North Dakota Century Code Section 28-32-421 provides any party of any proceeding held by the administrative agency, except when the order of the administrative agency is declared final by any other statute, may appeal from the order within 30 days. No appeal was made in that time period. North Dakota Administrative Code Section 690202-52 provides a petition to intervene in any proceeding must be filed at least 10 days prior to the hearing. Petition to intervene was made after the order was issued. Petitioner should have timely requested reconsideration 15 days after the order was issued. Petitioners have asked for the order to be rescinded and reopened. Reopening in this case is very untimely, as reopening can only occur between the hearing and the issuance of the final order, as per North Dakota Administrative Code Section 69-02-06-02-01. It is unclear whether petitioners find authority for the commission to rescind the order. Petitioners have also missed the time allowed to appeal the commission's decision to the district court, as it is very untimely. The petitioners had 30 days from the issuance of the order, as allowed. The petitioners' request to rescind the commission's order on November 20th, 2024, and reopen the proceedings based on its lack of inclusions of finding of facts or conclusions of law is not founded in the appropriate section of law. While the commission's order lacks specific headings of finding of facts and conclusions of law, the discussion section does contain the facts the commission relied upon the conclusion of the law used. The petition cite sections of North Dakota Century Code and the North Dakota Administrative Code are entirely appropriate. A proceeding involving the application for certificate of corridor capability and route permit. However, it did not provide a significant basis for reconsideration for the order of concerning the public convenience and necessity. The petitioners will have an opportunity to raise these questions when the commission receives the application for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit from Otter Tail and MDU, if and when it is filed. For clarification, the line may not be constructed without obtaining a certificate of corridor capability and route permit for the commission. Again, it has not been filed with us. The commission followed all the rules regarding the notice of opportunity of hearing, which is the process to ensure due process. The petitioners were not denied due process. They missed their opportunity to exercise it in a timely manner that is fair to all parties involved. So just based on the timeliness, we could have denied it. But we also have the opportunity to consider if there was new facts filed by the petitioners. The petitioners did not file any new evidence for the commission to consider, but rather relied upon arguments relating to the evidence already received and considered by the commission. The petitioners objected to Otter Tail and MDU filing a proposed order. The commission is under no obligation to use the proposed order and will give it the appropriate weight. Therefore, the commission orders The June 17th, 2025 objection is overruled. The petitioner's petition to intervene in this proceeding is denied. The petitioner's petition to rescind the commissioner's November 20th, 2024 order is denied. And the petitioner's petition to open the proceeding is denied.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Okay. Thank you, Sherry, for walking through all of that. One thing I just want to highlight, because it became obvious to me as I was reading all these filings that were coming in, is there's obviously some confusion for folks between the difference between a process for a certificate of public convenience and necessity and, you know, the siting authorization, or, you know, sometimes we call that a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit. And so, you know, when we talk about a certificate of public convenience and necessity, that process is used to determine, is there a need for the project that is in the public interest, and is the company who's applying for it fit, willing, and able to provide that needed service. I guess the way that I sort of categorize that in my mind is that a certificate of public convenience and necessity is about if they should build it because it's needed, but not how or where they should build it. So a certificate of public convenience and necessity does not approve a specific route or site. As Sherry said, the process for that, about where the route and a site for a project should go, is a completely different process with completely different hearings, governed by a completely different section of law. And again, just to reiterate, that process only starts when the commission receives an application. It's not something that we unilaterally initiate on our own. And so, again, to Sherry's point, a company cannot construct a project like this without siting authorization. And so when a company is ready to proceed, then they will send us an application and we will start our process. And if and when that happens, we encourage folks who have questions and concerns about this to participate, and we'd welcome their input at this time. But that's a separate process from what this process was about.
Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, I will say, for me, this vote is, it's not a hard decision, but it's awkward, because I dissented from the vote on the original vote on the Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity. And I don't regret that decision. I stick by it. But we can't change that. And for someone like me, now that I'm approaching middle age, I sometimes look at some of these things and look at history a little bit.
And, you know, questions coming.
but I remember well when North Dakota had a declining population, a pretty old population compared to the rest of the country, a high unemployment rate, and basically our universities were educating our students in order for them to go elsewhere and get jobs. And that has really changed around a lot. And some of it is just good blessings that we've received. But also some of it has to do with, I think, good leadership that the state has provided. And among those things are things like law and order and regulatory certainty. We can't continuously go back and review decisions over and over that companies have accepted our decisions, based their actions upon, and moved forward with, just because someone decides a half a year later, I guess, maybe a half a year after the decision, a year after, more than a year after the notice of opportunity for comment went out, to decide to get involved. And And I think of a case like we have gas generation just across the river. It's very important for running this whole area, keeping the electricity going. And what if somebody decides that they wish that the old coal plants were there and that the company should not get to recover their costs for that gas plant? What are they supposed to do? We can't keep relitigating the same things over and over and over again. And in this case, although it was not the decision I wanted, the commission made a decision, and now we need to stick by it. And so I think this is way too late. The one thing, the part about not having findings of fact, but you know, reviewing the decision that was made last fall, really the facts that the decision was based on were included in the order. It just wasn't highlighted in a separate paragraph that says findings of fact, but they're there. Although it's not a decision that went my way, it is a decision that the commission needs to back at this point, because that is part of regulatory certainty that is just one of the principles of a successful economy and a successful state. So I intend to vote in favor of this.
Is there any further discussion?
In favor of the motion to decline reconsideration.
I just want to thanks Commissioner Kringsted and Commissioner Chrisman for additional comments. When this request came in, we have the authority just to let 30 days pass. And if we don't act on it, it is automatically denied. As a commission, we have taken it upon ourselves to review this stuff, to not just, we could have said, oh, it's untimely, let it go, 30 days. But we don't, and I'm glad we do that, that's our tradition, our standard, that we do review these, and we just don't say it's an automatic. We looked at it again for the timeliness. They failed there, but also the evidence. So I'm glad that we are taking the time to show them that we do review the information that they submit. So I just wanted to clarify that we can let this automatically expire and then the request is denied.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That ends my portfolio. Yep.
Commissioner Kringsted.
Thank you. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Flickertail Solar Project, LLC, Flickertail Solar Project, Richland County, siting application, case number PU-24-351.
Second.
On October 8th, 2024, Flickertail Solar Project, LLC, filed an application for a certificate of site compatibility for a 295.1 megawatt solar energy conversion facility and associated facilities to be located in Richland County. On February 6th of this year, the commission deemed the application complete and scheduled a public hearing for March 24th in Wahpeton, North Dakota. The notice identified the following issues to be considered. First, will the location and operation of the proposed project produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota? Second, is the proposed project compatible with the environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources? And finally, will the proposed project location minimize adverse human and environmental impacts while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion? The proposed project will deliver up to 295.1 megawatts of alternating current to the grid and includes PV solar panels and tracking racking systems, inverters, transformers, underground and above ground electrical collection cables, a SCADA system, security fencing and equipment, an operations and maintenance facility, and a collector substation. The project will cover approximately 3,144 acres of land in Abercrombie Township in Richland County. Flickertail anticipates the project construction will begin in the first quarter of next year, 2026, and will be completed by the end of 2028, with commercial operations beginning in the fourth quarter of 2028. The estimated cost of the project is $375 million. Flickertail surveyed the project area for natural and cultural resources, designed the project to avoid wetland impacts, and conducted a glare analysis to evaluate potential impacts to road traffic and receptors. Flickertail initiated correspondence with federal, state, and local departments, including U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, North Dakota Department of Environmental Quality, North Dakota Game and Fish, the State Historical Society, and the Richland County Noxious Weed Board in Abercrombie Township. They have obtained a conditional use permit from Abercrombie Township and will comply with applicable township zoning ordinance requirements. North Dakota Administrative Code sets forth criteria to guide the commission in evaluating the suitability of granting an application for a certificate of site compatibility. These include, among other things, exclusion and avoidance areas. Flickertail's studies and surveys did not indicate any exclusion areas within the project area. However, they did identify several avoidance areas, including cultural resources, but the project has been designed to avoid cultural resource sites, and an unanticipated discovery plan has been developed and reviewed by the State Historical Society. There are also floodplains associated with the Pecarin Creek that are present in the project area, but project facilities have been cited to avoid and or minimize the impacts to the 100-year floodplain to the extent practical. There was also discussion at the hearing regarding a parcel that's enrolled in the PLOTS program that's administered by North Dakota Game and Fish. So there was one parcel that was present at the time within the project area. Flickertail has come to an arrangement with the North Dakota Game and Fish to remove that particular parcel from PLOTS and replace it with a parcel that is outside of the project boundary. And Flickertail will comply with the commission's decommissioning rules, including filing a decommissioning plan prior to commencement of operations of the project, and will perform decommissioning in accordance with all applicable rules and regulations. Therefore, finding the location, construction, and operation of the proposed electric energy conversion facility will produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota. The proposed electric energy conversion facility is compatible with environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources, and the proposed electric energy conversion facility location will minimize adverse human and environmental impacts while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion. Flickertail Solar Project LLC's application for a certificate of site compatibility is approved, and I support that order as well.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I just have to comment on this one, that especially for people like me who, you know, as an ag producer from Western North Dakota, I'm sure there's others who probably have the same concept of Richland County, that like every square inch of it will produce crops that are almost beyond our ability to understand. You know, it's just all perfect. And so why would you take 3,144 acres, almost 5 square miles, out of production to build a solar farm that could be built a little further west where the land doesn't produce as much? And so I asked that question, and I had multiple people from Richland County pointing out to me the whole rest of the day that not every square inch of Richland County is as good as I conceptualize, and that they have really picked an area out of there that doesn't have that kind of productivity value. In fact, a lot of this land is not even cropped. And so it's not what a lot of us think of when we think of the perfect Red River Valley farmland that are in this piece of property.
Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, I was going to add, I was going to bring up the egg land, so I'm glad you did, Randy. But at this hearing, the amount of public input was really encouraging to see all the people that came to the hearing, but also those that live in the community, their input. And I'm so glad that's why we as a commission staff go out to the counties where the case is involved for them to have an opportunity to talk. So it was well attended by the public and just well received. So it was good to see that participation.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, I think that concludes all of the portfolios. In a moment, we'll stand in recess and take questions from the press. After that, we will reconvene for the administrative portion of the meeting. But for the moment, this meeting is in recess.
And then for the solar project is...